Payson, well, I don't know if it's fair to call French a secondary language here, but one of the primary languages, as is the case here in Canada, or is a strong secondary language, or countries that have strong representations of French culture. And so Rendezvous de la Francophonie is an annual celebration of both the organization, but also the world of French-speaking peoples. For this first interview today, Catherine is speaking to Alan Friedman, who is, or Alex Friedman, rather, who is the executive director of the Community Radio Foundation of Canada. That's a national organization that does fundraising and provides funding grants to Kansas community radio stations like CJSF. We've had a number of successful grants through that program. Currently this year we're doing one that involves greatly expanding our training programs available to volunteers so that we can offer more advanced training in a number of different areas. In the past, it has helped fund the launch of our Studio 6 program of live music sessions and a revamp of our volunteer program, allowing us to create and introduce a volunteer coordinator position and a whole bunch of other really great programs. They also have another program which funds local journalism, particularly in centers that do not have a lot of local media available. All these programs, a really great organization, has really made a big difference in campus community radio, because until it came along, campus community radio generally sort of fell in the cracks between arts funding programs and social service funding programs. As a media outlet, we didn't really fit into either basket, and that often left us without a lot of funding for special projects and the ability to do things like create a whole raft of new training programs or transform some part of your organization or launch an ambitious new program is super valuable to a station like CJSF, and so important these days with the media landscape changing so quickly and technology becoming a much bigger part of what we do and competing with everyone else who's all over every different form of internet media that's out there. So here is part one of Rendezvous de la Francophonie with Catherine Fisher interviewing Alex Friedman of the Canadian Radio Foundation of Canada.
25 years of Rendezvous de la Francophonie. It's time to celebrate. Welcome to the Franco Podcast. Hello, my name is Catherine Fisher, and I had the pleasure of interviewing 6 bilingual Canadians for this podcast. In this episode, I speak to Alex Friedman, Executive Director of the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
I want to start by asking you, what languages did you speak as a child?
So I was raised in English, but I attended a entirely French public school in London, Ontario, from kindergarten to grade 6, and my mother speaks 5 languages. So there was always kind of a plethora of different languages. She speaks German, Russian, Serbo-Croatian, French, and English. So my world has always been filled with the wonderful sounds of language.
How about your father?
My father's an American who went to school at the Sorbonne, so he also speaks French, but with a very uniquely American accent.
So did you folks speak French at all at home?
We didn't, actually. We didn't speak French much at home at all, other than when I was doing homework for French school. In hindsight, it's a bit of a disappointment, because once I got out of French school, I found myself better capable to speak French than the public system in Ontario. And so it was very discouraging as a student. And I actually got out of French classes entirely because I felt I could teach the teacher. So that there was no French in the home then caused me for a number of years to not speak French at all, until I went to work in Montreal as a journalist. And believe me, when you try to interview the Sûreté du Québec in English, it doesn't go very well. So there was a relearning curve, which was unfortunate, but there we are.
How has your concept of being bilingual changed over time?
it's just part of the fabric of my life. I've always understood that I've been able to do it. What I see more, I think, is as a leader and as somebody who works in Ottawa, I have a lot of really talented people I'd love to be able to hire in different capacities. But if they can't do it in both languages, regardless of how qualified they are, there's really not much room for me to be able to bring them into the door. And so my perception as I've grown in my life is that the importance of being able to speak both languages is just so much more important. And I've raised both of my children in Quebec, and they go to a Francophone school. And in our household, my wife speaks in French to the kids, and I speak in English to the kids. So we've really kind of doubled down on our position on this and our desire to ensure that the next generation is better equipped.
Yeah, I wish I'd done a little more French in school, because French is a bit scant.
And it's daunting, right? And even for me, when I have conversations in French, if I have to present at a board meeting in French, no, I've done this for years, but it's daunting. It's not my natural space, and my head doesn't think in French.
So on the topic of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, so you're the ED, but tell me more about what the fund does.
So the fund provides support for community, campus, and Indigenous radio stations across the country. And so we, working with commercial broadcasters and the federal government, seek out new lines of funding and new ways of providing support for this large swath of broadcasters who, you know, broadcast programming in as many as 65 different languages. Many of our stations are either Anglophone stations in Quebec or Francophone stations in places like Peace River, Alberta. And so a lot of what we do is respond to these stations, in particular do is respond to the needs of those communities. And because radio has this unique ability to convey the sound and texture of language, it has an intrinsic role in the preservation and protection of language. The more we are able to hear the sound and the regional dialects, because, you know, if you're a French speaker in New Brunswick, the French is vastly different from the French in Quebec. So French in Canada in itself is not homogenous. And so what we do is provide an opportunity in all these languages for those sounds to be broadcast and distributed to those who want to engage with.
Mm-hmm. That must be amazing for you to have a sort of an overview of what all of the stations in Canada are doing.
Well, and every time we get to a conference, either through the NCRA or otherwise, I'm sitting around with these people and I hear this regularly. Yeah, it's really quite something. And I think that even, you know, Anglophone stations are aware of and will broadcast programming in French in their schedule. No community in Canada is strictly one language or the other.
So for people that might not be familiar with community radio, can you sort of sketch out what community radio is about?
So community radio is a broadcasting undertaking that is based in the community. All the stations are not-for-profit. All of the stations are run by community boards. By and large, they're supported by a network of volunteers that come from the communities that they serve. So community radio then has a unique way of reflecting their own community back to others. Community radio is on the ground with local news and information. Community radio is the first place we hear emerging Canadian artists. Community radio is the bedrock of what I like to call the Canadian voice. They're the stations who believe firmly in the mission and not so much in the profit. It's about what these stations do and not how they return investments to shareholders. And so it's a fundamental difference in how we approach communicating.
And how is community radio different from, say, the CBC?
So the CBC, for many, many years, has focused primarily on hubs and they still have the funding to be able to be in the local communities. You know, the journalists, for example, in Newfoundland and St. John's, try to get out to Sydney and you'll never see a CBC journalist unless there's a major incident. And so the CBC, I'm not knocking the CBC, does a remarkable job as a monolithic national broadcaster, but they don't have that individual community touch. They don't walk out of their studios in Sydney and into the grocery store with their listener. So the CBC does a wonderful job of being this massive thing, but doesn't do a great job of being on the ground. And the other piece is because of the way they've structured themselves. And I speak to this with some authority as a 15-year veteran of the CBC. There are a few of us who were able to transition over linguistic lines, but there's not a many of them. And the CBC, for lack of a better term, I hate it, but it tends to be very siloed linguistically. And there's no merging or sharing. When I think about community radio, I think of a place where from 1 hour to the next, you can be hearing a broadcast in Farsi about the plight of Iranian women and a way of interpreting Iranian news for Canadian Iranians. The next hour, you can jump immediately to a classical music programming and finally land in a Caribbean soca experience at the end of the night. And it's that variety, because as I say, we're not a homogenous and we're not just one thing in any Canadian community. So community radio compared to the CBC has a unique ability to really reflect the texture and tone of those communities that they serve, as opposed to the province of Ontario.
Obviously, there's been a lot of changes. Radio, some people are saying, is less relevant than it used to be. How do you find community radio stations are changing?
So first of all, I would say I would disagree with that point. We've recently seen studies suggesting that Canadians still engage with audio programming, you know, significantly more with AM and FM. And when I say significantly for more, you know, we're talking about 39% of Canadians still get audio programming on AM, FM broadcast. And the next best competitor is YouTube at about 14%. So I would first of all say that AM, FM still plays a critical role in connecting Canadians. The way community radios have embraced digital, though, has been a remarkable transformation. And community radio, while we remain, and I think uniquely in terms of community, public, and commercial broadcasters, will need to remain on the towers because we broadcast to communities that don't have, in some cases, digital connections. But only 24% of Canada's Indigenous communities have access to high-speed internet. So when it comes to connecting those communities, we need to be on the broadcast tower. However, we've also, and we've seen this time and again, embracing live streaming, embracing new ways of amplifying the signal, because there's a real desire for that community radio content. It's just so difficult on shoestring budgets to create the platforms and the different venues for that to get out. But as always, community radio is creative and passionate and develops those ways even with a lack of funding to be able to do it, which is why our fund has recently pivoted some of what we do to really promote the transition to digital in some way. But I think community radio will have to live with a foot in both worlds for many, many years to come. I remember 25 years ago in journalism school hearing about the imminent death of radio. And here we are today, still as a dominant medium.
Do you want to highlight two or three stations in Canada and the interesting and innovative things that they've done with money given by the fund?
Oh boy, I might get in some trouble here because of course we love all of the projects that are out there. But let me think of a few. So, one of the things we support is local journalism. And so we're really proud to be able to provide salaries and funding for as many as 41 stations across Canada to put journalists in the news desert. I think that's been one of the most amazing projects we've been involved with. As a former journalist, and as I watch the decline of quality information, to be able to contribute to that dialogue and to provide support for stations to contribute to that dialogue has been just remarkable. I'll point to the station up in Dawson City during the pandemic that was running radio plays. Right? Artists were not able to get into theaters to be able to produce the plays. But we needed more than ever to be able to connect with a cultural expression and an expression of the communities in which we live. And so to be able to use some funding to create radio plays with these artists and to be able to create art on the radio was just incredibly, this is a really incredible way of engaging with some of those elements. And so, I mean, those, again, I could go on and on and on. But those are a couple of programs where I think the funding we provide, and it's a great example of the funding we provide, has made a material difference, not just for the stations, right? When we support the station, we support the communities.
2023 is the Rendezvous de la Francophonie's 25th anniversary. What does the Francophonie mean to you, and what does the Rendezvous de la Francophonie's month celebration of the Francophonie mean to you?
It means that we can shine a spotlight on the beauty that is French in Canada. I mean, I'll ask the question I often ask about 1 month. Why just 1 month? Why don't we spend more time than that? But when we have a month like this, when we can focus on this, when we can tell these stories, when we can give non-Francophones the ability to relate with the experiences of Francophones, this was really powerful moment of connection. One of the challenges in society is a lack of understanding of what's happening on the other side of your hedge. This gives English Canada an ability to see across the hedge, to understand why Francophones are so passionate about protecting the language, why a province like Quebec has created an entire star system to promote its own arts and culture, and has done so in a fashion that has elevated that language and the arts and culture of that language to a level that nobody has seen in any other province in Canada. And yet, if you sit in Alberta, you don't understand this. And so La Francophonie, or Célébration de la Francophonie, is really this incredible portal to be able to bridge that and to break down the barriers that we often find in terms of common understanding. I hear it all the time from people across this country. You know, my wife and I will say, we were in a coffee shop in Winnipeg, and we were speaking French to one another, and somebody came up to us and said, "Hey, I want you to speak Canadian." That person needs to hear and understand why we're so proud to speak French, and why we both feel, and so many of us feel, that speaking French is speaking Canadian.
Well, I very much appreciate your time and your insight.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Merci beaucoup pour l'opportunité. Puis vive la France.
Thanks for tuning into the Rendezvous de la Francophonie's Franco podcast. In this episode, you heard from Alex Friedman, Executive Director of the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
And thanks to Catherine Fisher, your interviewer, for that segment of Rendezvous de la Francophonie. We'll have another segment of the Franco podcast next Monday morning as part of Speak Up. And you'll probably hear some of the other in the six-part series elsewhere on the CJSF schedule during this month of celebration up until March 24th. All right. Up next is a track from Negative Land. I don't know if you're familiar with the band or the collective, but they've been around for more than 40 years doing, I don't know how many albums they have here. Looks like about 15 or 16. Sometimes musical. Well, always musical, but not necessarily in the conventional sense of songs, but putting together sort of mashups and cut-ups and audio art and a lot of other sort of creative work with sound. This track that we're going to play here is a good example of that. Very musical, but with a lot of interesting and unusual elements put into the mix. This is from their latest release, which is called Speech Free, Recording Music for Film, Radio, Internet and Television. This is Negative Land, and there is no planet. Negative Land. And There Is No Planet, from the album Speech Free, recording music for film, radio, internet, and television, released just last year. If you're looking for some things to do with spring in the air, the annual Cherry Blossom Festival is coming up before long as well. One thing, the Cherry Blossom Festival actually has a whole bunch of different events that they're planning for early April when the cherry blossoms come out. Such a beautiful time of year here in Vancouver. But one that I think is particularly interesting is Bike the Blossoms. The event will be a beautiful slow ride under the tunnels of the hot pink Kanzen cultivar on the east side of Vancouver. Participants will end their ride with a coffee and tea from Scavenger Coffee under the grove of cherry trees to reflect on their experience. That's all taking place on April 22nd from 11:30 to 1:30 p.m. And the event will be starting in John Hendy Park, generally known, better known as Trout Lake Park in East Vancouver. And you can get more information at the Vancouver Cherry Blossom Festival website at vcbf.ca. And then there's more information about all their events right there. We also, running until this weekend, your last chance to get it this week, is an exhibition at the Audane Gallery at the SFU Goldcorp Center for the Arts. Carol Itter's artistic practices include performance, installation, audio improvisation, video and history recordings, and collage. Please meet the goose who have lived here before. Please meet the geese who have lived here before. Focuses on the result of resource extraction, marine pollution, and ecological extinction. And that's a visual arts exhibition happening at the Audane Gallery at the Goldcorp Center for the Arts at 149 West Hastings Street. That's right by Abbott Street. And it is running until March 11th, so just this weekend. So get down there and check it out. If you want more information about the exhibition and some other ones that SFU has at their various campuses and facilities in Vancouver, you can check out their site at www.sfu.ca/galleries. That's www.sfu.ca/galleries. And then there's information and pages for each of the different galleries they have. There's the Audane Gallery, but there's the Tech Gallery, which is at the Harbor Center, also downtown. There's the gallery up here at the Burnaby campus, and other rotating exhibitions from time to time. So check all those out. But this exhibition ends this weekend, so if you're interested in that, you're going to want to check it out right away. All right. Coming up on the very end of the program, so you've been listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We have a couple of messages, and then we'll be back just to finish off the show.
Hi, I'm ready to go.
You're hiking in that?
Of course. It's such a beautiful day, and I didn't want too many layers because I would only have to carry them.
You do realize these are mountains, right? It can go from sun to snow, and the paths are pretty rough and rocky. Maybe too much for flip-flops.
I'm pretty sure I'm prepared. I saw a picture of the hike on Instagram. Everyone wants to enjoy the outdoors. Just remember the three T's: trip plan, train, and take the essentials. Being unprepared could lead you to a situation where you need help, like from the North Shore Rescue, a community-based search and rescue team that provides life-saving services. For tips on how to prepare for a hike, book an info session, or to donate, visit their website at www.northshorerescue.com. That's www.northshorerescue.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In 2017, Hurricane Maria devastated the coastal town of Luisa in Puerto Rico. A local nonprofit stepped up to support disaster relief efforts, and they started by talking to women.
We women are leading communities. Women are taking care of kids. Women are taking care of elder, bedridden people.
That's Jennifer DeJesus Soto of Tire Salud, a nonprofit focused on women's health and violence reduction. She says because women are often caretakers, they frequently know who is most vulnerable and what their communities need in an emergency. So Tire Salud partnered with women on the ground to distribute food, water, infant formula, and medicine. The group helped set up community kitchens where people could get hot meals and access mental health services, reproductive health supplies, and other support. DeJesus Soto says the lessons they learned during Maria prepared them to respond during Hurricane Fiona this past fall. The team was able to ramp up relief efforts quickly, so women on the ground had the resources they needed to help themselves and others.
When you invest in women, you are investing in the whole community also.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
If you want to know about more about the kind of trouble you can get into by heading into the backcountry unprepared, like our message a few moments ago was warning you against, you should check out the series North Shore Rescue on Knowledge Network. Knowledge Network is the local sort of information and instructional show on cable television. They have a website at knowledgenetwork.ca. You should check it out. Really interesting. You've been listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Magnus Tewald. We are out of time. See you back here tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.